Here he goes. Third down play. Fakes the spike. Still has it. Now fires. And it's intercepted. It's intercepted to save the game by Harmon. And the Patriots are going to win it. Absolutely amazing.
That was the decisive play in the Patriots' 27-24 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday. That helped them clinch the AFC East division title for the ninth straight year in what was one of the more memorable regular season victories in the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era. It's Monday, December 18th. I'm Chris Gasper, and welcome to Season Ticket. The Globe's NFL writer Ben Volen is going to join us via Skype now to break down this game. And it really was a barn burner, Ben. It's not often in the NFL that these sort of game of the century type games live up to the hype, but this one certainly did.
That was an unbelievable game. The NFL could not have asked for anything better from a late season, regular season matchup. You know, Heinz Field, one of the best venues in the NFL, Steelers, Patriots, Brady and Roethlisberger going toe-to-toe, everything on the line. And it's really funny, Chris. I kind of had this realization this morning. Yesterday's game was basically a Super Bowl for the Patriots. It had all of the elements of the Patriots' Super Bowls in recent years. You had a furious comeback by the Patriots. The Patriots having to drive the length of the field and executing when they needed it the most. The Steelers have opportunities at the end of the game to seal it, and they don't. Sean Davis drops that easy interception that could have just ended the game.
There's his pass. Almost intercepted. Could have been a game ender had Sean Davis held on to it. The ball was deflected.
Gronk makes a shoestring catch to keep the drive alive.
And off the ground, Gronkowski, it is a catch.
A crazy play by the Steelers to negate the Patriots' comeback. Juju Smith-Schuster running 69 yards down the field, and you think it's all over.
Across the middle, Smith-Schuster running for that sideline. Take as much as he can, and he breaks away. Now he cuts it up the middle, still on his feet, looking for some help. Inside the 15 and all the way to the 10-yard line.
And then the Patriots calmly handling that final situation at the end and letting the other team just trip all over themselves and melt down. And we saw it again with a slant pass over the middle from Roethlisberger that's intercepted in the end zone. And it's just remarkable how similar these big games are for the Patriots. And yesterday was basically like a Super Bowl for them.
No, it's a great point, Ben. I mean, it certainly had echoes of Super Bowl 51 and Super Bowl 49, particularly Super Bowl 49 against the Seahawks with the what are you doing decision to throw a slant near the goal line. And I want to talk about that because I think that's something that's going to be talked about for years to come. The situation for the Steelers, they have a touchdown that gets overturned, and now you have to go back and play. So now on second down, they throw a pass to Darius Heyward-Bey, who can't get out of bounds. Great play by Malcolm Butler. Now the clock's ticking. They don't have any timeouts. So on third down, you know, here they are in chip shot field goal range. You think you just spike it, you kick the field goal. It's 27-27. You go to overtime. But then the Steelers have this incredibly disorganized play, and we played the sound off the top, so you know how it ended with the Daron Harmon interception. But you're looking at that play with Roethlisberger. It's a fake spike. Only Eli Rogers runs a route among the Pittsburgh skill position players. And there's literally six Patriots defensive backs who all have eyes on Rogers, who's basically triple covered by Jordan Richards, Devin McCourty, and Eric Rowe, who made the tip. What was going on with the Steelers? Why were they so sort of indecisive and disorganized? Or were they really trying to trick the Patriots? Because in listening to Ben Roethlisberger explain what the Steelers were doing after the game, I couldn't figure out what their goal was. Was it to run a fake spike or was it to not run a fake spike?
Ben Roethlisberger said after the game, he kind of threw his coaches under the bus.
It wasn't a fake spike. I was yelling clock it because I felt like that was the thing to do was clock it and get yourself one play. And it came from the sideline, don't clock it, don't clock it. Well, at that time, I'm already got everyone thinks it's clock, so you don't have time to try and get everyone lined up. So it's I tried to.
I don't mind the decision. I like it. You're being aggressive. There's time there to make one more play. You're trying to catch the defense kind of off guard and disorganized. And for a lot of teams, that play probably works, or at worst, you know, you throw an incompletion. You live to see fourth down and you kick the field goal. And it's, you know, the Steelers obviously have this big monkey on their back when it comes to the Patriots, and they want it to be aggressive and go for the win. I like the play call. It's the execution that was horrible. Ben Roethlisberger can't be trying to force it in there on double or triple coverage. He needs to just throw the ball out of the end zone if the play is not there. And Roethlisberger just kind of blew it with the execution. So that's, once again, the difference between Patriots and everyone else. The Patriots calmly handled a crucial late-game situation while the Steelers melted down.
And the other thing with Roethlisberger is he sort of intimated after the game that once you snap the ball, it's like, well, you have to make a play, like you have to throw the ball. I completely disagree. If he looks at that play and says, geez, we don't have it, they're all over Eli Rogers, let me just throw this away, we'll kick the field goal and live to fight in overtime, that's what you do. But to force it in there like that, that's just a terrible, terrible decision. I mean, Roethlisberger with Antonio Brown out of that game for the Steelers is their best player. And if you look at this game down the stretch, the Patriots' best players, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, rose to the occasion and played their best. Roethlisberger cannot make that decision and not make that mistake at that juncture of the game if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers. So once again, a Patriots opponent complicit in their own demise. The other play that people will be talking about from this game for years to come is the Jesse James TD that was overturned with 28 seconds left in the fourth quarter.
To the end zone. Caught! Touchdown, Pittsburgh! Jesse James!
Then the refs overturned the call.
After reviewing the play, the receiver in the end zone did not survive the ground. It's an incomplete pass.
Oh, my goodness!
It'll be Pittsburgh's ball.
Believable.
Second down and 10 at the 10-yard line.
So we have that explanation, Ben, of why they overturned this call. Here's the thing. I think that the referees made the right call. I think that Alberto Riveron back in the control center in New York for replay made the right call. My issue with this is the NFL's catch rule. I feel like since 2010 with Calvin Johnson, when there was a misinterpretation of that rule, in my opinion, instead of just admitting they're wrong, they've been trying to justify that misinterpretation for years, and they actually changed the wording of the rule to match that misinterpretation. Because I look at that Jesse James play, and I understand what the rule is. And again, like I said, I think it's the right call. But in reality, if you look at it, there's two separate motions there. He catches the ball, he starts to bring it in, and then he starts to extend it. And the inconsistency to me is that if that were Le'Veon Bell, who had been handed off the ball, or Ben Roethlisberger, who was scrambling and got to the end zone, and they did exactly the same thing, that play would have been dead the moment the ball reached over the goal line. So it seems like wide receivers are the only ones who have to play by different rules when it comes for stretching out to the goal line.
Chris, I'm going to disagree with you here. I think the NFL is trying to take subjectivity out of the catch rule and trying to make it as black and white as possible. And if you think it's inconsistent now, give the referees more latitude to kind of determine what's a catch and what's not, and it's going to be all over the place. I think it's pretty clear. When you talk about those running backs, they're already established in the play. The wide receiver, Jesse James in this case, catches the ball and quickly turns upfield, but he's also falling in one motion, and you need to complete the catch. And it's pretty clear that when the ball hits the ground, it moves, and he temporarily loses possession of it. And the rule says you have to maintain control and survive the ground. Like it's they're trying to make it as black and white as possible. And, you know, it's ticky tack.
Well, it's not
stuff,
working.
But
it's not working though, Ben, because the average fan looks at that play and the Kareem Hunt play in the Los Angeles Chargers Kansas City game on Saturday night, and they say, why isn't that a touchdown? So there's a disconnect between what the NFL is trying to do. You're saying they're trying to make it clear. But it's not. It's not clear to the average fan. The average fan looks at that and says, why isn't that a touchdown? That looks like a touchdown to me. That looks like a catch to me.
If people are confused, then it's up to me and you and the NFL to explain to people why it's not a touchdown. And
I think if people are confused, it's an unclear, bad rule. That's my opinion. They got the call right by the rule, but I don't think the rule is clear enough or consistent enough.
What's the answer, Chris?
If the average fan can't figure it out.
I
think the answer is, and Mike Tomlin, the coach of the Steelers, is on the competition committee. I think the answer is to change the rule when a guy gets around the goal line so that if he clearly has possession of the ball and is making an effort to extend it over the goal line, a la Dez Bryant a couple years ago against the Packers, this play with James, where if you slow it down, you can see he has possession, he starts to pull it in, and then he starts to stretch it back out to reach over the goal line. I think the answer is that in that particular circumstance, and you've read the rule book, Ben, you know it very well. There's a lot of addendums and A, B, C, D in the rule. That's an easy one for them to go and sort of put back in, that basically a receiver around the goal line is going to get the same treatment as somebody else who already has the ball in terms of if they establish possession. And we have replay. You can slow it down and figure out whether the guy has real possession or not, and then tries to extend the ball over the goal line and loses it, we're going to treat you like a Walter Payton when he used to dive over the pile. I mean, if you're a running back and you dive over the pile and you just reach the goal line and some guy slaps it out of your hand before your feet even hit the ground, what do they call it? A touchdown. You don't have
right,
to complete.
He's already,
There's no
he's
completion
already established
of the play.
As a, he's already established as a runner and with control of the ball. And I mean, you're advocating here having a different set of rules during the game for when a team gets when in the rule book is there ever two different sets of rules? It's, you know, they don't call holding differently based on field position. And then you get into a whole can of worms. Well, what constitutes around the goal line? If he's on the two, does that count, or the three and he starts reaching? Like, again, they're trying to take the subjectivity out of it, and it's black and white. Maintain
for me,
control,
they get paid.
Survive
they get
the
paid
ground.
For the subjectivity. That's what you get paid for as a referee. There's degrees here. You get paid
well,
to make
okay,
those decisions
I mean,
and look at
but
those.
But the
replays.
NFL decided that they don't want the referees deciding. Well, that kind of feels like a catch, or the rules are black and white. Survive the ground, maintain control, and you know, if people don't understand it, well, we just have to explain it better because that's what the rule is.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And by the way, again, they got the call absolutely right. I just think when you try and have one size fits all rules for what is a nuanced game, I think you end up with plays like that where the average fan looks at it and says, I don't agree or I don't understand. But look, we can debate that play until the cows come home. It is what it is. It was a huge play in the game. The Steelers still had an opportunity to win that game, and they didn't make the plays, and the Patriots did make the plays. All right, so we're going to talk more about this game when we come back. A lot to get to. Rob Gronkowski with a fantastic performance in this game. We're also going to go around the NFL a little bit. A former Patriots quarterback had a big game. We'll tell you about that next. Welcome back to Season Ticket. We have great news for you. Season Ticket is now available on Spotify. So if you want to listen to us there, you can do that. Just search and hit follow. Of course, you can still subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Ben Volen, senior NFL writer for the Boston Globe. Ben, we have to talk about Rob Gronkowski's performance in this game. He was tremendous, a career-high 168 yards receiving on 9 receptions. On the go-ahead touchdown drive, he had 3 catches for 69 yards, and in the second half of that game, he had 135 yards receiving. He really was the difference in this game.
It's amazing that for all the times that the Steelers have played the Patriots, they still have never figured out how to defend this guy. And poor Sean Davis, second-year kid, was, a second-round pick last year. Talented young safety, pretty big and physical, just had no chance of stopping Gronkowski yesterday and got completely abused. You mentioned all the stats there. He was so big in the second half. I think he went 6 for 135 in the second half and 3 for 69 on the final drive where you got to have it. Once again, streaking down the middle of the field, wide open, as always, against the Steelers' zone defense. They were manning him up for most of the game, and then all of a sudden they go back to that zone defense late in the fourth quarter, and two straight catches of 26 yards, then another one down to the goal line, and then he punctuates it by catching the two-point conversion. So a huge game for him coming off that suspension. I think it probably served him well to not have to play in that physical game in Miami, to get a week of rest and to be ready to go for this big game. And coming off a back surgery, and there were questions about, is he ever going to be the same player? Now has 1,017 yards for the season, 7 touchdowns, leading the Patriots in receiving. Is earning his incentives, earned a $3 million incentive by going over 1,000 yards. Probably looking at the Pro Bowl and first team All-Pro again this year. Gronk's been dominant in everything the Patriots could hope for.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting really close to that top incentive, right? I mean, you know, a lot of people were concerned when he missed the Miami game, the suspension for the Tre'Davious White hit in the Buffalo game, that he was not going to get all these top tier incentives. But now he's in a situation where he's 183 yards and 16 catches away from getting the full 10.75, correct?
Yeah, he has $5.5 million total in incentives, and he earned 3 of it. And there's still $2.5 million that he could hit. And, you know, he needs 80 catches, 1,200 yards, 14 touchdowns, 90% of the snaps, or become first team all pro. He just has to hit one of those 5 levels. And so the catches and the yards are reachable. I was worried that at the end of the season here, Gronk's goals wouldn't align with the team goals, that he's going to be chasing stats, and rightfully so. There's nothing wrong with that. They put those incentives in his contract, so he's certainly allowed to go chase them. But the team would need to rest him and get him healthy for the playoffs if they have playoff seeding wrapped up. Now, the Patriots, since they're tied with the Steelers, they're going to have to keep pace and continue to win to make sure they get the number one seed. And the Steelers have the Texans and the Browns to finish. So you got to assume that they're going to finish 13-3. So now Gronk's incentives are reachable. You still need to play him because you need to win these games. And it looks like he's happy and well within reach. So it's all going to resolve itself, thankfully. But there was that issue of whether, you know, it was going to come in between Gronk and the player if he wants to keep playing and the team wants to sit him.
Yeah, a huge game for Gronk. I mean, really, he owed the team one. I think he felt that way. Guys were saying after the game that he felt like he owed him one. I thought that Miami loss was on him for not being there and committing what was a stupid and selfish penalty in that Buffalo game. And as you said, the offense is so much more dynamic when he's in there. Also, it always helps when Tom Brady's throwing you the ball. And Tom Brady has owned the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's now 11-2 against them. The Steelers actually intercepted Brady, which never happens. It hadn't happened since 2005. It was 301 pass attempts.
They got to him, and it's intercepted. It's Williams who finally was able to pull it in. The pressure was on Brady. He had to unload it, and he's picked off for the first time in 12 years against Pittsburgh.
Again, as you pointed out, when they absolutely needed to have it, Brady was there, and there was no answer from the Steelers. And once again, there's nobody who bounces back better than Brady. And now all those people like Max Kellerman of ESPN who were talking about, here comes the cliff for Tom Brady, I think they're going to have to wait a little longer.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like he's slowing down too much. Having a pretty good season here on pace. Well, he just had his ninth 4,000-yard season ever, 28 touchdowns. The 7 picks is actually a little disconcerting. It's more he's thrown an interception now in 4 straight games, believe it or not, 5 interceptions over his last 4 games. And he was looking like he was going to be the GOAT a little bit for that game last night, and not the GOAT that we usually refer him to. That interception was bad, and that was totally on him. He had no need to throw that ball. Should have just taken the sack. So, you know, it's a quintessential Patriots victory here. They were composed and they handled the situations and overcame a game that they had no business winning, and they came back and won it and took command of the AFC. And the whole season, honestly, may have changed on a couple of those plays, because now the Patriots are the front runner for the number one seed. We all know they could have been looking not only falling behind the Steelers, but they were looking at the 3 seed potentially falling behind Jacksonville if they had lost that game. And then everything turned on a couple of plays last night. And now the Patriots are looking at home field advantage and the number one seed. And the road to the Super Bowl most likely goes through Foxborough again.
Yeah, if they can take care of business against Buffalo and the Jets at home here in the last 2 weeks. And you called it the quintessential Patriots victory. Absolutely right there. I also think it sort of epitomized their run of success since 2001. They were very, very good when it mattered the most, and also a little bit fortunate in terms of the tip and making sure that call goes the right way. And it was the right call ultimately. But that's the Patriots have benefited from some good fortune during this run, and there's no shame in that at all. Something that was bad fortune in this game, or misfortune, losing Rex Burkhead to a knee injury in the third quarter. Ben, what do you know about that injury, and is this something that they're concerned will keep Rex Burkhead out for a significant period of time?
I've seen a report that Burkhead did not tear his ACL, but it does sound like he'll miss a little bit of time. So this might be a case where maybe we don't see him until the divisional round of the playoffs. If the Patriots are lucky, I mean, talk about a guy that they really can't afford to lose. Such a good 4-down player for them. Their goal line, short yardage running back, a guy they line up out in the slot and out wide at receiver, and a very good receiver for them, and then a key contributor on multiple special teams units. So Rex Burkhead is not an easy guy to replace. And again, good thing they won yesterday, because now they're in the driver's seat, and the complexion of the season changes for them, and maybe they can afford a little bit to rest Burkhead and make sure he's healthy. And now Mike Gillisley gets a chance to be the short yardage back. But, you know, Rex Burkhead's a key part of that offense, and they're going to miss him, no question.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They are definitely going to miss Rex Burkhead, but they'll take the W. And this was a game that lived up to the hype. and the Patriots end up getting the inside track to home field, which is really, really important. I'll be honest with you. I don't feel like Pittsburgh can come here in January and beat the Patriots at Gillette, especially if Antonio Brown can't play. Now, look, they're saying it's just a partially torn calf muscle. He'll be back for the playoffs. Who knows what percentage he'll be at. But if you're the Steelers, you have to be thinking, what do we have to do to beat these guys?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be just, you know, looking to the heavens and incredulous that once again, the Patriots have your number. And boy, they had a good game plan yesterday, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And once again, Brandon Cooks had a big catch, but otherwise was kind of held to a quiet night. And Amendola, Rex Burkhead, those guys were kind of quiet until Brady finally awoke with Gronkowski in the fourth quarter there. So the Steelers had a good game plan, and Roethlisberger was efficient. Even when Brown went down, he was still moving the ball. And Martavis Bryant and Smith-Schuster had fantastic games. Le'Veon Bell was chewing them up. The Steelers' pass rush was getting to Brady. It was all falling into place. And then the Patriots in the fourth quarter, as our good friend Dan Shaughnessy liked to say, they just ripped the Steelers' hearts out and stepped on it on the floor. The Patriots, it's a familiar sight now. The Patriots coming away with the win and the Steelers dejectedly going away with a loss.
Yeah, and the Patriots, you don't win many games when you're 3 of 9 on third down, and they were 0 of 11 the week before against Miami. So third down will be something they want to look at, but it didn't come back to haunt them yesterday. Speaking of things that may come back to haunt them, I want to get your thoughts on Jimmy Garoppolo, who had a great comeback for the San Francisco 49ers yesterday.
Garoppolo over the middle, wide open. It's Kittle, the tight end, all the way to the 45. A gain of 23.
Jimmy G was 31 of 43 for 381 yards and a score as he led the Niners to a 25-23 victory over the Tennessee Titans. He's now won all three starts with the 49ers, and he's 5-0 as a starter. What do you think about Jimmy G playing in San Francisco and the way he's played?
You mean, as I like to refer to him, as MVP candidate Jimmy Garoppolo? I love him, and he's been phenomenal. It's so fascinating to see the effect he's had on the 49ers and how much buzz and excitement there is inside that building and in the fan base for what Garoppolo has done for that team. This is the same personnel that started the season 1-8 or whatever. And Marquise Goodwin is all of a sudden a 100-yard receiver every week, and George Kittle and Garrett Celek and a bunch of nobodies. And they're winning 3 in a row. 2 of them were on the road. Garoppolo has been everything they could have wanted for him. And now he's going to get a full offseason, and they have a lot of cap space and a young roster. Like, the future is very bright in San Francisco, and they were just gifted this franchise quarterback by the Patriots, who only wanted a second-round pick in return. It's pretty remarkable the way that it's shaping out right now. And Garoppolo, it's going to be very fascinating to kind of track this as the seasons go on, because, again, the Patriots did not maximize this asset, and I totally understand wanting to stick by Tom Brady at this point, but Jimmy can play, and Jimmy's good, and the 49ers definitely have something in Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's changed the culture of that organization. I think it's a good thing they did play him. They mothballed him long enough. Now you see what's happening. Not only are they winning, but they are decreasing the value of that second-round pick that they have to give up to the Patriots, because they keep winning these games, and that pick keeps falling further and further back into the second round. So it's a real win-win right now for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and the 49ers. So I just wanted to sneak that in. Obviously, we were focused here on the Patriots and what is a memorable regular season victory, a game that certainly lived up to the hype. Ben, you were lucky enough to be there. A lot of us watching it on TV will certainly remember it for a long time. All right, that's Ben Volen of the Boston Globe, senior NFL writer. You can find Ben on Twitter at Ben Volen. Look out for his great breakdown of what happened in the Steelers game. Can't wait for that. Ben, thanks so much for coming on Season Ticket.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend. Leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.